Good morning, Raleigh Mennonite Church. It's an honor to be with you all this morning as we gather in fellowship to pray, to reflect on these words of Jesus, that I am no longer in the world. Here we are in ascension time. I hadn't really given much thought to ascension before preparing to come here today, I have to confess. And I was talking with friends, what is this? What is ascension about, right? What is this? We're given this image in Denise Levertov's poem of God going from being in his Christmas flesh, his incarnated flesh, the word enfleshed in the world, to then his mysterious resurrected body, which behaves a little strangely, right? He moves through walls. Can you touch him? They can't quite recognize him. His body's already starting to do something different after he has conquered death. And then this final task of the word enfleshed, returning to the Godhead, returning to the creator of the universe that the word danced with before the world began. So this is the time that we are in. Jesus's body isn't with us in the way it had been for his disciples and apostles and earliest followers. Jesus's ascended body means, of course, and we can say this intellectually, that Jesus dwells in each of us who seek to know and love and belong to and be claimed by him. It's the absence of God that allows for God's somehow infinite, intimate presence. But that all can sound quite theoretical, right? The John's gospel, you're like, how are we all living and moving in this, John? I'm having a hard time with some of the language of metaphor. I need concrete witnesses to show me how to do this and what is the way. And I think Eastertide is a season to share the stories, the witnesses who have stirred our hope that it is possible to belong to this God, this Word who became flesh and dwells in each of us and is glorified in and through our lives of love. When I think about the witnesses in my life, I was remembering how critical some certain friendships were along the way. A friend in college was Angie Lederach, daughter of John Paul Lederach, a well-known Mennonite peace builder. And Angie is not far after her family, has not fallen far from the family tree, right? It was grown up in a very salty understanding of what it means to live on this side of the ascension, which is you have to be the hands and feet, right? You can't just, it's not about what you do for an hour on Sunday. It's how you live your life. As a sophomore in college, I was a little bit disturbed by her witness. She showed up we went to a school that was a big football college. And I'm actually embarrassed to tell this story because it's kind of horrifying. But at football games, one of the chants that all the students would join in with was a kill chant. You'd like kind of do this horrible sign. I think about it now and it kind of fills me with chills. But at the time I was just like, oh, this is normal. This is what we do to our opponents. We wish murder on them. I don't know. And I remember Angie's first game and she got there and she was disgusted. And she just walked out of the stadium. She's like, this is gross. Like, what are you all doing? Slowly, she inspired another witness and our little group of friends would stand in the stadium when the kill chant began and with little peace hands start singing, peace is flowing like a river, like flowing out of you and me. And it was kind of sweet and funny. I don't think we were creating social change in the consciousness of fellow football fans, right? I'm not deluded into thinking like what this witness was. But it was Angie and her Mennonite self in this very Catholic college that was injecting an agitational presence about what it meant to try to follow this Jesus, to be one worthy of standing in this inside of this prayer that John has prayed over us this day. It came to a head at graduation when they announced that someone who was one of the major architects in President Bush's administration, who oversaw, again, an architect of the war and invasion of Iraq, was going to receive like an honorary medal at graduation. And we had all been in peace studies classes together, trying to figure out how to live lives that would build up peace in the face of the powers of death. So when this news came out, we were all disgusted. But Angie was the one who said, well, what are we going to do about it? And I was like, what do you mean? We're going to be mad and then we're going to go to graduation. Like, I don't know. We have to actually take a risk of speaking against this, of not saying that this is okay. Right? What else has our education and formation, what else has all the time in church and worship been preparing us for? And so it was my personal first putting myself not just in a meeting where we're talking about change, but a direct witness and protest at graduation. We put Pax Christi across our, what do they call those caps? Your graduation caps, right? So you could see from the crowd, this little witness, and we turned our backs when he received his award. And I was shaking, I was terrified. I felt sick in my stomach. I thought, my parents and grandparents are here. This is not what they prepared me for, you know? But it was an important embodied learning that said, following this Jesus who guides our feet in the way of peace, who casts out the powers of death, even as they're nipping at his all around him, the moment he begins his public ministry, we have to be willing to put our own bodies on the line to bear witness to him. We're the only sign. We're the living sign. So I just invite us in this moment and time to think about who on your path first invited you or agitated you or called you in to move from faith that was just in the head, a little bit theoretical, or maybe an impulse of the heart that needed a little invitation to step out and do something with your own body, with your own time and the relationships that you were giving yourself. We give thanks for these witnesses on our path, witnesses in how to be in the ascension time. My own path then wound through the work of faith-based community organizing. I believe you all have had some time with One Wake here as founding members, helping to try to reweave a space of seeking the common good, not just flashy politics or partisanship, but how can we work together across denominations and traditions to seek what is held in common and especially attend to the needs of those who are most vulnerable in our midst? My path led then to Divinity School, where I met Melissa Flora Bixler as we intersected at Duke Memorial United Methodist Church. She showed me how someone could preach to the whole congregation in the 5 minutes of a children's sermon. And it was the first time I was in a worship space as a cradle Catholic where your fittedness for proclaiming the gospel was not dependent upon your gender. I had the opportunity to minister up the road at the North Carolina Correctional Institute for Women. I think you all have also ventured there, sat through the horrific blue card trainings in order. Oh, Lordy. We've got to do it again, though. We've got to re-up now that we're on this side of COVID to minister to our sisters who are incarcerated. And it was while I was ministering there that I saw what I cannot unsee. the connection between women's absence in the pulpit of my own church's tradition and the gender-based violence that is often at the root of the root of the stories of what has led someone to be locked up. But what to do about it? Angie's question persisted. As I came towards the end of my divinity school time, I was wrestling with my vocation. Where should I go, Lord? Where would you have me serve? Who have you called me to? And so I committed to doing what's called the Ignatian Spiritual Exercises over the next year. Now, the Ignatian exercises are a beautiful gift for everybody who's seeking to come closer to Jesus. You basically commit to spend way more time in prayer than we're used to, right? You spend an hour each day really trying to meet Jesus in the scripture, the Word made flesh who wants to draw near and be known in our lives, in the ordinariness of our lives. How do we cultivate the eyes to see him and hear him? And often you do the exercises when you're at a vocational discernment point. So I was guided by a wonderful Episcopalian priest and spiritual director, and coming with all my angst. God, have you actually called me to preach and to preside? Yes, child, it's the problem. I've also called you to remain. And I'm like, well, you haven't called me to a tradition that's so cool with me preaching and presiding. Like, what are we supposed to do? And he's like, just pray already. Just learn to pray. I'm working it out. And let me tell you, this is one of the signs, one of the miracles. Think of John's gospel, right? This book of signs. We aren't without them in the world today. So one of the signs for me was that right as I was gearing up to begin this year of prayer, leaders of women's religious communities, orders of sisters from around the world, were having their regular audience with Pope Francis, the head of our church. And they put the question to him. It was like a good organizing meeting, actually. They had prepared it ahead of time. They knew what he knew what he was going to be asked. And they said, Holy Father, what about women deacons? He said, good question. We do need to look into that. And in record time for the Catholic Church, like within 2 months, he had appointed the first gender-balanced commission in Vatican history to study the topic. So Jesus was saying, I got you. I'm going to work it out. It was a real sign of hope for me that this would be a conversation in the life of the church that had raised me up and reared me, which I felt wouldn't receive me in ministry, that this would open up. And so I sought to do what I felt like I was being called to, which was to pray and wait, but also to relate, not only to sit back and hope that the Holy Spirit would work it out, but to go and listen and engage with others. And what I started to find is that I wasn't alone. I found women all across the country. One woman said that when she heard the news about this Vatican commission, it was the most joyful she had felt, second only to the birth of her children. Like, it was just like this eruption of impossible good news. So I found others and found I was not the only one for whom this spoke to a vocational desire. A few years later, COVID hits, and it was an opportunity to gather for free over Zoom all of a sudden. And so from across the country, we gathered to pray with the Word, to share our stories, to try to listen to the Holy Spirit. And we felt something emerge that was held in common, a shared lament, a shared dream. And isn't this the way with all of our communities on this side of the Ascension, that we come together to pray, to ground ourselves in the Word, to engage with the signs of the times and to hear what is ours to do in response. And thanks to the agitation of Angie Lederach, I said, we can't just pray and keep it to ourselves, but we must bear witness somehow. And so we gathered on the Feast of Saint Phoebe, the deacon named in Paul's letter to the Romans. She would have been the one to carry his letter to Rome. And she's named deacon in the scriptures. And then she's invoked for the next 500 years in all the early church fathers as deacon, invoked at ordination rites of women deacons. So we prayed to her and we shared our stories. Over 500 came together across on Zoom for this initial prayer. Paul mentions that she was a benefactor to many and to him. And I think she still is, because she sent us a patron just a few months later. I got a call on the longest night of the year as we were preparing to celebrate Christmas from a woman who said, "If you could wish on the Bethlehem Star, if resources weren't an obstacle, what would you do to try to move this conversation forward in the life of our church?" What would I do? Okay. She said, "Submit a proposal." And the thing just flew out of me, right? It had been building up for years, but its hour had finally come to be expressed. 4 months later, we launched Discerning Deacons in April of 2021 on the feast of St. Catherine of Siena, an order of preacher and great church reformer. We launched with a mission to grow participation in the active communal discernment about women and the diaconate. Part of why I share this is that I think this way of moving, of discerning together, inviting people to participate, is the way that, as I understand it, Mennonites already walk in this world. And so I feel indebted to those brothers and sisters in the wider Christian communion who witness back a way of walking in Jesus's way in communion. So we began the conversation, inviting people in the capillaries of the church, not in social media or in, which is kind of a cesspool sometimes, but what difference would it mean here in the life of our church and our wider community if women were authorized to preach the gospel, to preside at baptisms and witness at funerals and weddings, to stand as equals in ministry with our ordained brothers, to be able to be received by the state as a chaplain, and therefore to be able to bring communion to those living in isolated units up on the hill at the Raleigh Women's Correctional Institute, who haven't had a priest visit them in years. We began in stories, listening deeply to men and women across the country, and also learning from our sisters in other parts of the world, particularly women in the Amazon. Women in the Amazon who have been courageously carrying this question for the church, even as they spend their days trying to defend communities against genocide and protecting the lungs, the womb of our earth in the Amazon. How are these questions alive here? And as we began to get to know women there, they said, "You cannot separate out this question of women's roles and voice and agency in the proclamation of the gospel and the decision-making of our church structure in the world from the cries of the earth and the cries of the poor. These things are fundamentally bound up in one another. And what we need is a new vision for ministry, a new way of walking together as all baptized, queer and straight, male and female, indigenous chief leaders alongside vowed Christian religious sisters, all fighting for life against the powers of death." Together with a delegation of these women from the Amazon, we journeyed to Rome just 6 months after we launched, with a prayer of encountering our Holy Father. And we did, in fact, have our moment to be received by him. We thanked him for his work to open up this conversation about women and the diaconate. We presented him with an image of Saint Phoebe. And he told us, "Firme adelante. Be strong, keep going." I share this story because there's such joy and maybe even glory on this path. when we recognize that Jesus, from the beginning of his ministry, even as he's being chased down by the authorities who are always looking to trip him up, seeing him as scandalous. So when I hear the voices saying, women are not allowed to proclaim the gospel in the Catholic Church, you're not permitted to preach at Mass, your ordination would be an abomination to God, you're not following the rules. In some ways, this can feel like an absurd conversation to have in the year 2023. But we both know we live in a world where women and children in particular are vulnerable, aren't seen as having equal indignity, that their knowledge of God and their experience of faith is not seen as valid or important as a man's version. Think of how we see their needs for healthcare and rights. So I think it would be no small thing for a woman to hold the Gospels next to the Pope in St. Peter's and project that image out into a wider world. We would slowly catch up to our brothers and sisters in the Mennonite Church and the broader Christian communities who have long called and recognized the gifts of women as equal alongside that of men. That we are all called not to be served, but to serve. This prayer we have from Jesus today follows his foot washing of his disciples, right? Part of his last discourses before he is ready to go and complete the work to which he sent. And so today, friends, I would ask you for your prayers on this work, that you would be someone who's praying for me and this mission, and that I would continue to pray that we could be one as Jesus prays that he and the Father are one. And that each of us would find, as Jesus models for us, that we would do the work to which we have been called, whatever that witness might be, to declare in our communities of fellowship and organizing, ministry and accompaniment, to proclaim through that the Word was with God and the Word was God and the Word became flesh and now lives inseparably connected and bound in us, that we belong to the God who created all of it, held by the God who sees us and knows us intimately, and that as we share in this intimacy, we are glorified. Not made famous or exalted above every name or become internet celebrities. No, we're glorified in that we know joy and abundant love in a world that looks like it is primarily marked by death and despair. Jesus comes that we would live more vulnerably, open to courageous witness inspired through the encounters of the suffering of others. That we would seek him in the lowly places, that we would be people of radical welcome who can learn to share our table ever more graciously, something we have a long way to go, I must say, in the Catholic communion, but that God gives each of us a work to do, a work in whom we can come to know the grace of God's glory. So we stand here today trusting that God, Jesus, stands praying over us. Holy Creator, keep us in your name. Across our denominational differences, may we continue to inspire one another, agitate one another, strengthen one another in the witness and the work to which each of us is called. Firme adelante.